The World Behind My Eyes. Can you hear a smile? Have you ever heard that certain quality in a friend's voice that says that he is lonely? Can you tell from your mother's footsteps that she has had a very stressful day? Do you ever listen for that certain something in a friend's laugh that tells you your friend is laughing to cover up his sadness? For my entire life, I have been totally blind. Now, before you say to yourself something like, "Isn't that awful?" or "Boy, he must miss a lot," stop and think for a minute. You see my blindness as it would seem to you if, all of a sudden, you were no longer able to see. To be sure, that would be a most devastating occurrence. I, on the other hand, have never known what it is to see with my eyes. So, I use my other senses. I see with my hands, my ears, my nose, and my mouth. If you really stop and think about it, it can be a wonderful way to look at things. In my world, there are no pimples, no one is fat, no person I know has any kind of physical deformity, and we are all the same color. Yet, I live in a visually oriented society. Social scientists have said that as much as 80% of what we perceive is perceived with our eyes. Even if that percentage is greatly overstated, I think it's safe to say that most people use their sense of sight more often than any of their other senses. And yet, if we let it, sight can be a distancing phenomena. We can see things and people from so far away that we often think we don't need to get close enough to use our more distance-limited senses. We can look at a person and draw a conclusion based mostly on their physical appearance. However, it takes some time to get close enough to speak to them or to hear what their voice is saying to us just beneath their words. A small stone beside the path might catch our eye, but it takes time to pick it up and discover that it is so smooth and so right in our hand. It may be just the very stone we want to keep in our pocket to rub whenever we're tense or anxious, or to give to a special friend if they are sad and lonely. In addition, most of the descriptions of the things we perceive are stated in visual terms. We could probably talk for a long time about the beauty of a sunrise or the spectacular view from a mountain peak. But what words would we use to describe the feel of silk, the sound of a person's laugh, the taste of our favorite beverage, or the smell of a rose? I know that I visually miss a great deal when I'm with my family and all those I love. How a person looks is an important part of who they are. The physical beauty of our world is also important. But because of my parents, I also know that there is something beyond the sense of sight that allows us to perceive things and people in other ways. My mind drifts back now to those long, hot afternoons on the riverbank with my father. "What's that sound, Daddy?" I would ask. And he would put down his fishing pole and go in search of the cause of an unknown noise. Sometimes he'd be lucky, and my childhood curiosity would be appeased by the discovery of yet another bird or cricket or frog. But most of the time, he never found it. Creatures of the forest have a way of becoming quite invisible when you're trying to find them. I also remember the times when I would ask those hard, perplexing questions about life as I understood it as a 6-year-old boy. "Daddy," I would ask, "why do trains run on tracks? And what does a train look like anyway?" To a 6-year-old boy, trains can be the extremely important stuff dreams are made of, and daddies like mine always seem to understand that. One of the earliest recollections I have of my father is the touch of his hand on mine as he handed me a train that he had made with modeling clay because he wanted me to see a train in my mind's eye. Those very rough, weather-worn hands, acquired from many years of hard labor in the factory where he worked, knocked at the door of my consciousness in a very strange and perplexing way. His hands were so large, so rough, and so full of power, and yet they were so very gentle as they handed me that crude model of a train. I know it sounds strange, but there was something in his touch that seemed to say that he was sorry it wasn't a better train. There was something in the way he placed it in my hand that made me know that this large, quiet man, making hardly enough money to feed his family, would spend every penny he had to buy me a real train if I'd ask for one. "But it will never run on a track," he said. But he was wrong. In my dreams at night, it carried me with it to far-off wonderful places where I could have never gone without it. I can still smell the smoke coming from the engine as it climbed the mountains near my home. I can still hear the faraway haunting whistle echoing off the frozen stillness of a winter's night. I can still feel the rumble of the wheels beneath my feet as it sped toward some unknown place. "But he can't see the train," I remember hearing a childhood friend say. For many years, I remembered but didn't really understand my father's reply. "Oh, yes, he can." And then there was my mother, who, much to my family's amazement, would allow me to play on the front porch near the edge of the steps that went down into the yard. "What are you doing?" my grandmother would ask. "He could fall down those steps and break his neck, and you're not close enough to stop him." "Yes," my mother would say, "that could certainly happen." But she was also quick to point out the other two possibilities. He could sit there, helplessly, waiting for one of us to take him down the steps, or he could figure out how to get to the bottom on his own. I love him enough to be willing to take that chance. What comes back to me now is the sound of my mother's voice, so soft, so gentle, so filled with love. In all the years I knew her, I never heard her say a negative thing about anyone. If that isn't love, I don't know what is. I write this in celebration of that unexplainable something my parents had that transcended the world of my blindness and set me free from a constant longing for sight. Although neither of them was lucky enough to graduate from high school, their love for me and their common-sense approach to life gave me the ability to see the beauty that is all around me. Each time I touch an unknown object, I understand and appreciate the beauty of what my father taught me to see. Each time I hear the faraway whistle of a train, my father is right there with me, saying, "Neil, did you hear that?" Each time someone says to me, "Watch out, don't fall," I understand the sense of freedom my mother helped me find. Each time I recall the sound of her soft, southern voice, I am reminded to speak gently to those I meet along the way. I also write this in appreciation of my sighted friends who have allowed me to see much of the world through their eyes. For years, they have described for me the things I can't see. They've talked of giant skyscrapers, ocean waves, mountains, works of art, rivers, trees, animals, birds, ships, planes, clouds, and people. Although there are many things I can touch in a way that will give me a perception of their totality, other things remain literally outside my reach, except as they are described by sighted friends. A cathedral spire, for example, is too large to be felt at one time, even if you were able to reach it from the ground. And an amoeba may have never been discovered in a world of totally blind inhabitants. For just as many years, I have been describing to my sighted friends the things their eyes have sometimes overlooked. The laughter heard in the footsteps of a child, the loneliness and pain apparent in the voice of a friend, or the special beauty that can be sensed when you close your eyes and touch a tree, a moss-covered rock, or the delicate petals of a newly opened blossom. It has been, I think, a fair trade. Their words have taken me to places I would have never gone without them, and mine have opened doors which they may not have thought to look behind. Thank you, Mom and Dad. I have been truly blessed to be your son. You have taught me that seeing with one's non-visual senses requires one to get close enough to things and people alike to truly know them in ways I may not have done had I been able to see the world with my eyes from a greater distance. Thank you both, and thank you, all my friends, for the gift of inner vision.